Yeah, so what was I saying?
Droughts in
You were
some
talking about
areas and
droughts and floods.
droughts and floods. Yeah, so it's been raining here, which is good, because we've had droughts for a few years. We're in Adelaide, which is basically on the south. Well, the state is called South Australia because it's in the south of Australia. We have very helpful state names.
To the point. I
Whereas,
like to have names that where you
understand where they are. It's good.
yeah, so we have South Australia, Western Australia, the Northern Territory. Between them, they take up like two-thirds of the land mass. And then, of course, you've got Queensland, Victoria, Tasmania, and New South Wales, which is like Wales but newer and souther.
To be fair, Wales is pretty north, so it's almost a given that it's going to be a southern version.
Yeah, well, that's the part that's interesting. I don't know why they called it that, because usually, like, America's got lots of news. You've got a New York and a New Jersey and a New Hampshire. So I don't even know
New
where Old
Zealand, well,
Hampshire is,
New
but
Mexico.
New Mexico, like, but they don't have to clarify, like, this is new, slightly North Mexico,
No, we just have North and South Carolina and North and South Dakota. Because obviously, none of the people who are naming these things could be creative enough to come up with their own names.
Yeah, but yes, no, they're it's fascinating some of the origins of the names of how creative or uncreative people were when they showed up and said, this is like New Wales, but there's something different about it. Like, I don't
I struggle with naming things for like my Dungeons and Dragons characters or anything I'm creating as a dungeon master, and I worry about whether or not my names are creative or not. I think I can take solace in the fact that
Oh, yeah.
someone was just like, I just loved York so much. I'm just gonna name this New York. What are we naming this city? New York. But we named the settlement New York. Yeah, well, too bad.
Yeah, and what are we going to name the streets? Well, this is First Street. This is Second
Yeah.
Street.
Now, I will say on that front, having streets where you can easily identify where you are is incredibly useful. I went from so growing up in Detroit, everyone knows everyone about like Eminem and 8 Mile, and how about 8 Mile is the thing is it's called 8 Mile because south of 8 Mile, a mile south is 7 Mile, 6 Mile, 5 Mile, and then you go up. Sometimes it goes up to something like 26, just kind of depending on where the street naming conventions are. Over in Utah, they just have everything out on a grid. So if I say that my house is 523 North, 600 East, you know exactly where my house is.
It's
Seattle kind
funny.
of does the same thing, though not to the same extent.
It's funny you mentioned Dungeons and Dragons, though, and like struggling to name things, trying to be inventive. I got my whole family to play at Christmas, including my grandparents, which was a bit of
Yes.
a it was a bit of a challenge. I did have to work to convince them to do it. I was like, come on, big old family, bonding experience. But of course, my grandparents, I thought, right, I'm going to have to name them something so that they won't forget it's them. So my granddad's name is Brian, and I called his character Bran, and my nan's name is Gina, so I called her Jean. So they literally could not get it wrong if I was talking to them. I mean, we had a bit of a wobble a
That's
couple of
awesome.
times, but my granddad was like surprisingly bloodthirsty, so he got really into it. He was like, "Can I disembowel this person?" I was like, "You can try if you roll the dice." Yeah, it was good.
We just had a family reunion, just the immediate family, no super extended or anything like that. But my sister has been trying to get into being a dungeon master, and so she put a thing together, and she got her son, who's like, I think he's like 4 now, 3 or 4, as well as my other nieces, and it was I didn't get to be a part of it because there was a full party, basically, and this is kind of for children's and whatnot to do and for her to get her feet wet, but it was really entertaining just hearing the stuff that's happening in the background as this three-year-old's like, I got the thing. It's like, okay, you got the final hit. Are you going to befriend the dragon? Are you going to kill him? I'm going to stab him in the face. It's like, okay, we're stabbing the dragon in the face.
Violence first, ask questions later.
I mean, you know, when you're four, you got to, you know, heroic slay the dragon. Mm. Not everybody got to grow up with Trogdor the Burninator. Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to the Zelda Universe Podcast. We are grateful to have you join us as we reminisce about our many adventures in the land of Hyrule and beyond. My name is Connor Schultz. It is a pleasure to be with you once again. And joining me this time, we have a truly worldwide ensemble here. So I'm coming to you from the Western United States, and coming to us from the United Kingdom. First time in, it's about a year and a half now, Maisie, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, first time was about that. And yeah, so I live in Wales in the UK, but I'm currently on holiday in Menorca. So it's 11:30 here, and I'm hot and sweaty, but I'm powering through this podcast for the love of Zelda.
I'm so glad. We should have gotten a tunic. Get that Goron tunic. You should have.
Oh, tell you what, that would be so helpful right now. Yeah. Wish you hadn't mentioned that. Thinking about that now.
Sorry, I should have brought it up. And then from the quite literally other side of the planet then in Australia, coming to the podcast for the first time since our revamp, Cody, welcome back.
Crikey, mate. I'm here from Australia. Is that the accent you were hoping for?
Is that going to be your thing the entire time?
Oh yeah, I'm just gonna see some crocs and say what a beaut.
Okay,
just like Steve Irwin, everyone's favorite.
All right, well if you find some crocs there in your apartment while this is going on, we will switch on the camera for the YouTube feed and have you go at it.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a common problem.
Well, it's Australia. Everything's trying to kill you in Australia.
But yes, I'm glad to be here, Connor. I'm happy to be back on the podcast that I have been part of since probably 2010 or something like that when we launched it.
Holy cow, the podcast has been around that long? That's crazy. Well, we are going to start today with... I want to call it breaking news, but it's not breaking news anymore. We had wrapped up the podcast for last month. I had just started editing all of the stuff when we get news of a Nintendo Direct happening the next day, which is what Nintendo tends to do. And by the end of the Direct, it was dang it. We just finished wrapping up the podcast. So let's talk for a little bit about our new Zelda game announcement. How long did it take both of you to realize what exactly Nintendo was giving us?
So I, a responsible adult, didn't watch it because it was at like 1 in the morning, so I just caught up on it in the morning.
Well, good. Sleep is... The older I get, the more I appreciate as much sleep as I can feasibly acquire. I meant more in terms of when you were watching the video.
Yes, yes. No, look, I think the Great Deku Tree, quite a familiar face. I think it's something that... Yeah, look, see, okay, so here's the problem, Connor. The reason that I was spoiled watching the video is that I woke up and checked my messages.
Oh, no!
And everyone was talking about Ocarina of Time. So I can't pretend to you that I, partway through the Direct, had a realization.
you know what? Fair. Very fair. And I appreciate your honesty.
I was wondering about Nintendo, though, because the Switch 2's come out. I've got my Switch, and I've been dead against getting a Switch 2 simply because I've not really seen a game that I want to play that's exclusively for the Switch 2. So I was thinking, they're going to have to bring out something quite special for me to consider getting it. And I was wondering, would they do a remake? But I thought they kind of did Twilight Princess and Wind Waker for the Wii U, which I got because I like those games. And I didn't think they were going to remake Ocarina of Time, but I did think Ubisoft's done a Black Flag resync, so I think they're trying to bring back these sort of classic staple games. But I wasn't expecting Ocarina of Time, but I opened up my phone one day, I just kind of, the Nintendo Direct kind of went over my head. And when I saw the trailer, I showed it to one of my mates, and they went, that's AI. And I went, oh. Then I watched the trailer, I was like, oh, no, this is real. So it was the little boop, boop, boop. And then I was like, oh, my God, it's real.
That'll do it.
So, but I'm like, oh, Nintendo, you got me. I was not going to get a Switch 2, and now I'm seriously contemplating it. I was like, oh, they know how to get us. They really do. So, yeah.
The first image of the castle immediately got my antenna up, these antenna that I do not have on my head. And then it was the tree, because he's kind of there in the corner. And then you start reading the subtitles before he's finished speaking. It's, oh, wait. Oh! So it was one of those things that's been rumored for the last, like, 6 months or something like that. And at this point, I have gotten so tired of all of the rumor mill and getting super excited about the announcement to just, you know what, let's just wait for the actual announcement before I actually take anything seriously.
Well, Ocarina of Time is one that's been, you know, for the last 2 decades, we've been having IGN or whoever else being like, here's Ocarina of Time in Unreal Engine or whatever, or coming up with the fake April Fool's Day announcements for Zelda movies, which is also real now. So, you know, it's all happening now. Everything's happening. I wasn't too surprised. Putting aside the leaks, it's also just Nintendo re-releases all of its games, except Wind Waker and Twilight Princess, which it hates. But, like, it's it's everything else is available on the Switch at the moment in terms of, aside from Wind Waker and Twilight Princess and the DS, 3DS games, we have a pretty broad selection of stuff on the Switch between the Virtual Console and re-releases and remakes. We've had The Link's Awakening, we had Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, we had Wind Waker and Twilight Princess, even if they won't port it to Switch. We had Skyward Sword, Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom got Switch 2 versions. So, like, all the 3D games and more have been getting remakes, but I think this is the first time we've had basically a second remake, because Ocarina of Time already had its 3DS version. But now that 3DS version is older than the original was when the 3DS version came out. So it's been...
Holy crap, it's been that long?
Yeah, it was only like a 12-year gap between the N64 release and the 3DS version, and it's been another 15 years since. So that is a retro game now, Ocarina of Time 3DS. It is a game that some of the kids who are watching this trailer were born after the release of Ocarina of Time 3DS Remake.
And that's a good point as well. Like, I think they're trying to bring Zelda to a new generation now, because I think Breath of the Wild did something quite good, which I think was, it was very much open world, which was quite different to the previous titles. So I think that brought in a bigger audience than before. So I think, yeah, you're right. It's gotten to a point where this remaster is like for a new generation to enjoy, rather than playing like a retro game. I think that's a clever move from Nintendo as well, with the film coming out as well. I think they're trying to gather, you know, get more players for their older games, but in a new format as well.
Which actually begs the question then, and this is something that we touched on during our weekly staff meeting the week after the game was announced. Josh, who has been on the podcast, made the point that the trailer itself actually was kind of dumb in the fact that it told us literally nothing except for the fact that they're making a game.
Yeah.
So the grand question that is on most people's minds is this a actual, honest to highly a remake, or is it just like the 3DS upgrade was for the original Ocarina of Time, or the Link's Awakening for the Switch was, in which it's the exact same game, it just looks prettier.
And Connor, I don't know if we've even had confirmation that it's a game. This could be a new addition to the Nintendo Alamo. Because after all, the only thing we've seen is Link sleeping. And so, like, that's the only thing that was shown in the game. So maybe the next trailer will be Link being woken up by the Nintendo Alamo and it will say, bye today.
Perfect. We're just going to have
Navi.
Why do we need an Alarmo? We can just put Navi on our phone and just being, hey, listen, you get the exact same experience.
It's just a lot more jarring than my usual alarm clock.
Mm.
I have Zelda singing in Skyward Sword as my alarm. It's a lot nicer.
Oh, that sounds so nice. Yeah, that's the best one.
It's very, very nice.
I wouldn't put anything nice as my alarm because I grow to dread my alarm.
I wanted something that I would enjoy as I woke up. I tend to be a fairly light-ish sleeper the later I sleep, and so a nice, beautiful singing voice, just singing a lovely melody, it's fit the bill perfectly.
Yeah, I think that's a lot nicer than Navi, you know, making your cortisol, like, spike. Does it too much in the game. I don't want that in real life.
No. But yes, Connor, we don't know, to your point, what kind of game it is or whether it's a game at all.
We know nothing. We know absolutely nothing about what this game is supposed to be, which makes discussing the game itself really challenging, actually. I have no idea how many videos have been made on the subject, how many other podcasts have already like gone headfirst into what changes are they going to make? What new additions are they going to give to the plot? What brand new dungeons and items? Like, we don't know if it's going to have any of that. It could be like the Master Quest that you got for pre-ordering, I think, Four Swords Adventures. When it's just the exact same game, they just moved a couple things around and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm suspecting from the... We do know that they're calling it, what, Reborn?
Oh, I don't remember hearing that.
It's a remake, is that correct?
I don't remember hearing it. The title just on the trailer is just Ocarina of Time. Let's get our fact-checking on.
No, it's... or maybe... That might not be a subtitle, but they keep saying the term Reborn.
Okay.
Like a legend reborn and that sort of thing.
Which, unfortunately, could still mean anything.
Would you want Ocarina of Time to be a very faithful remake? Or would you want more additions, especially like to the plot and things? What would you prefer? I'm a little bit on the fence about it, to be honest, because I do like a faithful sort of adaptation, but I think it's a good opportunity to maybe do a little bit more.
Personally, I think a full-blown 3D remaster may actually struggle a little in the gap between the gameplay of what people know from the Zelda series now in Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom of open exploration, and the Ocarina of Time, here's a texture that's actually a wall, you can't climb it, go on to the next spot. You know, like, it's fine to an extent, you can do it, but my assumption is that they would want to introduce a little more of what the current generation of Zelda fans would be familiar with, because Breath of the Wild is, again, Breath of the Wild is old now.
Yeah, it's almost 10 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is coming up on 10 years old. And that means that there's a lot of people who grew up, they were 10 when the game came out and now they're 20. And to them, Zelda is open world adventure. And Ocarina of Time actually has a decent chunk of that. There's three or four dungeons, I think, that you can do out of order once you get into the adult stage.
Yeah, you more or less can do Water or Fire interchangeably and Spirit and Shadow interchangeably.
I think if they're going to redo it, they don't have to redo it. They can't just make the whole thing a climbing simulator the way that Breath of the Wild is, because that would completely break the game and make it unrecognizable. But I think they can make it more open in the sense of doing all the adult dungeons in whatever order you like, or something along those lines. But I just don't know. There's a lot that you can do with it. I have actually been playing the Final Fantasy VII Remake recently, because I got a Switch 2, and since the Switch has been my only console, I couldn't actually play a console previously that could run Final Fantasy VII Remake until now, so that's my use case for the Switch 2, is playing third-party games from other consoles. And that's the one that comes up most often in discussion around remakes, because those were basically the two pillars of late 90s video games. These are the two greatest video games of all time. One was on the PlayStation, one was on the N64. And Final Fantasy got that remake that turned out to be more than just a remake. It turned out to be playing with timelines and all sorts of things, and saying, what if this happened but this didn't happen, and multi-universes and all sorts of things.
With some Kingdom Hearts thrown in for good measure.
Yeah, and that's something that you could do with Ocarina of Time. I just don't know that they care enough about the timeline to do it, but Ocarina of Time is the timeline game. Like, the whole timeline system does not work without this game and its splitting of the timeline three ways. It's sort of the fundamental part of understanding the timeline. And so, yeah, what would happen if they said, all right, we need to get everything on track again. We have Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom are currently flapping loose. They are not part of the official timeline in any coherent way, because the official timeline was confirmed basically as part of a book that came out alongside Skyward Sword, which was the timeline game where they're like, this is all part of a grand plan. And then Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom came out and they said, don't worry about the timeline. Something's happened. Everything may have happened. It's 10,000 years in the future. Don't worry about it. And so if they were wanting to be consistent in tying things back, I think a new version of Ocarina of Time that leads to the events of Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom and is like a slightly different timeline, and also ties into the movie in some way, would neatly loop around all of their systems to make it so that they had a new canon, basically. And again, I just don't know if that's something that they seriously would consider, because they don't care about the timeline beyond, like, they'll make the game and then try and see where they can push the, like, they're not playing Tetris, they're playing, like, put all of the trash in the cupboard and then hold the cupboard closed.
Man, I should have had you on last month when we talked about nothing but the timeline for half the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Look, I got plenty to say about the timeline, but I think basically the timeline was a project for them of Skyward Sword, which, because of its purpose as the prequel game, that explained everything. But now everything's out of order again. So, yeah, that's my two main theories, is something that ties it back to Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, and or something that ties it back to the movie.
I love a good story. And when it comes to Ocarina of Time, that, along with Link to the Past, were my two linchpins in storytelling growing up. I love them to death. A couple of years ago on my Twitch streams, I do Zelda every Monday, I went through Ocarina of Time again, and I tried to take a more narrative focus to the game. So as I'm going and I get to a circumstance where, okay, we are running into Mito for the first time. This is how it goes in the game. We all know that because we've played this upteen times. But if we were to expand the story, how would this actually go? And they've made a manga about this, and there have been, I'm sure, tons and tons of fan fictions and whatnot. So this is certainly nothing that is unusual or unique to me, but it does illustrate that there are things that you could do to really give depth to the Ocarina of Time story. Get a better opportunity to meet and interact with the sages beyond just the quick meetings that we have in the game, things like that. So there's potential there. The only question is how or whether they will do it at all. I would enjoy it regardless of how you think Nintendo focuses on their stories when it comes to making their games. They do a really good job with their stories, especially with the Zelda franchise. So I'm not too worried on that front if they decide to expand it out.
Yeah. Look, I think Ocarina of Time's main story is good. Ocarina of Time's side stories are lackluster, I guess, compared to the rest of the, in terms of side quests and things. If you compare it to Majora's Mask, which came directly after, Majora's Mask blows it out of the water on character side quests and things like.
Well, to be fair, that's like literally what the game is.
Yeah, but Ocarina of Time, the part that I struggle with going back is, I've replayed it. I enjoyed going through the quests. I enjoyed the dungeons. I basically skipped over Hyrule Field. I wasn't interested in like. Hyrule Field has three holes with cows in them. Like, that's just not, like, the world's most exciting overworld. And so that's the part where, again, talking about the Final Fantasy VII Remake, one of the things that they did was basically slow down the pace of the game. Like, that full first 40-hour game of Final Fantasy VII Remake is the first 5 hours of the original game.
The first disc, they basically split up the three discs that were Final Fantasy VII and made a game out of each one of them.
And so if you apply that to Ocarina of Time, then you say, well, all right, this is a 40-hour game in Kokiri Forest. We're going to do side quests for each of them, and then we're going to learn all about them, and then the forest is going to burn down, and then we'll be emotionally affected.
Ah! Dang!
So, and that's how they get you.
At the very least, can we give Navi a proper story arc?
Yeah, I would enjoy it because that's the thing. We have all these grand plans about a full remake. I don't know how far Nintendo will go. Like, I wouldn't want just a remaster, but I wouldn't necessarily want a remake if it loses too much of the essence of Ocarina of Time. But what I would be happy with would be Ocarina of Time, but they expand out, like you go to Lon Lon Ranch and there's more to do there, or you go to Kokiri Forest and there's a couple character side quests that make you attached to the characters there. Like, there are those little things that you can do around the edges to add a bit more character to the world, add a few more mini games and adventures and that sort of thing. So that's, I think, what I'd... My main preference would be a perfect version of a full remake, but I don't have that much confidence in that. So my second most preference would be take the core of the game, but improve the stuff around the edges, give it more character to the side characters.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that would be good to have for it to, you know, keep that core Ocarina of Time feel. But yeah, I think it does slightly lack with the side quests. So yeah, I think that sounds like a good thing. Just enrich the world and you get to know the characters more. I think that's what I'd like to see from it as well. I don't want it to, you know, rip up the whole sort of plan and do too much. But I think, yeah, it needs a bit of work around the edges, like Cody said. I liked what with Echoes of Wisdom, because I've been playing that recently. I found, like, with the map, how it looked and the side quest things, I think they might sort of Breath of the Wild brand the map and the side quest maybe, because that was one similarity. I saw in Echoes of Wisdom and I thought, oh, they plucked that straight from Breath of the Wild, that format with the quests and the map. So I'm thinking we might see a little bit more of that format as well, maybe. We'll see.
Of course, Maisie, if anybody who's been keeping up to date on the features knows that you don't want a remake at all. You want a full-on trilogy of games.
Oh, yeah, right. My vision, okay, for the Hero of Time, right? You've got Ocarina of Time and you've got Majora's Mask, but I'm thinking, right, you know, he obviously becomes the hero's shade. But I'm thinking there's a gap there. I thought it would be so cool to have like a more mature adult Link who's kind of fulfilled his destiny. So what does he do after that? I thought that would be a really interesting sort of story to tell. I mean, obviously, still a bit of mystery about, you know, how he becomes the hero shade, but I think that would be pretty cool. Because usually we play Link as a young boy, sort of, for, you know, growing into his destiny and helping, you know, save Zelda or go to this adventure and that. But I thought this could be a mature, settled Link, but we get to see a hero kind of do his last hurrah in a way. I thought that'd be pretty cool. That would be like the best trilogy of all time. That's just my thoughts on the Hero of Time. Because it's a sad story when you see him in Twilight Princess. When the penny drops, you go, oh my God, that's him. I just thought a mature Link would be an interesting spin on the hero that we all know currently.
Yeah, no, when you said a trilogy, there were several different directions I went. I was like, oh, are we committing to the Final Fantasy VII thing where it's like the first game is just the child Link, and then you...
You're the one who introduced the idea of Kokiri Forest burning to the ground, so...
Yeah, I mean, look, that's... like, if I was a cruel video game director, I would have 10 hours of getting to know each Kokiri, then coming back to find it overrun with Stoutfurs, and there's like three of them remaining, and they say, we don't know where Saria is, and then you're hit with a real gut punch. But I think senior citizen Link, I think.
That's it, yeah.
Old man Link.
Like, if I was to travel around to different game franchises again, Assassin's Creed 2 does this across the life of Ezio, the main character there, yeah. And you get stuff of like, here's him when he's 20, here's him when he's 30, here's him when he's 50, still doing parkour around the rooftops, but sort of complaining about his knees.
Yeah.
And then you'll get flash forward or flashback sequences. So like, here's, this is the end of his life. This is him hobbling along, fulfilling his destiny or whatever. I think some of that stuff could work as maybe not full blown games in their own right, but just like additions to the character of like, what's, you know, like an epilogue, more of an epilogue situation. Because sometimes epilogues in these remakes and stuff get turned into full-blown experiences of their own. Like, I'm thinking about, well, not even remakes, but, like, Pokemon Gold and Silver. Like, you finish that game, and you're like, oh, hold on, you're telling me there's...
There's all of Kanto?
Yeah.
There's all of the original game? And that's where I do wonder if they do make major additions to everything, like how far can they go in introducing stuff that has entered future games? Or, you know, I'm not suggesting that there'll be a full-blown portal to Termina at the end of the game.
That'd be amazing though.
But maybe that will be the setup for the sequel, Majora's Mask Remasked, or whatever they want to call it.
Remasked, I like. Yeah.
If they want to make cement the timeline as constituted, this is their opportunity to do it. However, they want to illustrate that as a, if you die at some point, you get like a scene where things go in that direction, or maybe there's some kind of discussion where Ganondorf is talking about his plans and how that suddenly becomes a cutscene, something like that. So there are plenty of options that they have. The only question is, are they going to do any of them or none of them at all? So we can only sit back and wait until Nintendo decides to finally give us some information.
Yeah, no, it will I'm sure we will at some point learn at least like who's developing it and questions like that, and have a better idea of, because there is, if it's outsourced to Grezzo or whatever, then you can assume that it's not a new Final Fantasy VII situation, and it's either a remaster or a remaster with some tweaks. If it's Nintendo's first party, you know, 3D Mario, 3D Zelda division, then all bets are off on what's in the game. So I think, yeah, just a few more details and we'll know a lot more.
Well, we'll keep our ears to the ground and be ready to come back with all of our hot takes as soon as we find out some information.
Yeah, we do know that Link has a better bed than he had in the original Ocarina of Time. That's the only new information we have.
And shinier hair.
That makes all the difference in the world. Buy that Switch 2 now.
Do it.
Well, let us move on then from speculation and get back into some retrospection as we move on to Medley's Melodies, the series in which we choose our favorite songs from the Legend of Zelda franchise. And we're actually going to be staying with Ocarina of Time for this one, as we get to a theme that I would say a lot of us would rather not hear again, if only because we keep getting stuck listening to this song over and over and over again.
I've been playing Ocarina of Time on my 2DS, like, I'm playing it at the minute, and I swear to God, every time, I'm like, I've played this before, like, why do I keep on doing this to myself? It's just like a merry-go-round. So it's a good song, but yeah, I think it's the association that might let it down occasionally.
A merry-go-round. Oh my God, that is a wonderful association. So just to make sure, in case the music you're hearing in the background has not already tipped you off about what's going on, we are talking about the theme of our guiding owl, Kippora Gabora. And merry-go-round is a wonderful description. It is not the one that Will Nelson here describes it, but just the round and round and round you go is you're not wrong. I'm in the middle of replaying Link's Awakening, the Game Boy version, and that was the mainline Zelda game right before Ocarina of Time, not counting the CDI games, which is its own other discussion. And I can't help but juxtapose the two of them, because the Link's Awakening owl is a lot more kind of what you expect from the wise owl archetype. Meanwhile, like the music here is describing, Kippora Gabora is a lot more whimsy. He's just happy to see you. Look at you! Out on your own on a grand adventure. How awesome is that? Let me talk to you for the next hour.
Not to mention he carries you down the mountain as well a couple of times if you know, if you want him to. He's very helpful.
Oh, yes. He's famously helpful. I think that's how people would describe him. He helps you with lots of tutorials. He helps you learn reading comprehension, because in order to escape his menus, you need to figure out the definition of a double negative and a few things like that.
Realizing that no isn't always the second option on a menu.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's, have you got all that? Yes, no. And sometimes it's like, do you want to hear that again? Yes, no. And those have flipped responses as to whether you should say yes or no. I think it's genius. I hope they expand this in the remake. I hope you just get forced through every time you go somewhere, the owl forces you through a riddle in which you have to escape its menu.
We're going to have a full-on IQ test baked into the remake.
Yeah, it's just going to be unskippable 30 lines of exposition, and then, didn't you get all that? Did you get not that?
Yeah.
start needing to understand turns of phrase.
Have you thought that this is a thing that maybe you didn't get?
Is it possible that you may or may not have been entered into a situation where you could not, perhaps, have not understood the thing that I didn't say?
I think there should be a third option for, like, maybe. Yes, no, maybe.
That's the actual correct answer.
Yeah. Just see what happens, yeah.
Just be as vague as possible. I will say, though, that something that we had talked about in regards to Skyward Sword here is actually really applicable and has been part of my defense for Na'vi for a long, long time. The thing with Skyward Sword that, this is Josh again, if I recall, the Wii was designed for everyone, regardless of how experienced they are with video games. So to make that apply for a Zelda game, you need to have someone there, Fi, who will explain everything to you. Hmm. Lowest common denominator type of deal. Ocarina of Time is actually the exact same way. This is the new frontier that is three-dimensional video gaming. Everything else had been top-down or side-scrolling. So how in the world do you interact with this world where you can look in three dimensions every single way you go? How do you deal with a door? Na'vi has to explain that to you because we've never had to press a button to open a door before. You just walk through the door. And Kapora is the exact same thing. There are so many things that we take for granted as experts in 3D gaming that were absolutely radical back in 98, 97.
Oh, yeah. No, like I think Na'vi has a reputation for being annoying, but that's not because Na'vi was annoying the first time you played the game. It's that Na'vi is annoying the 35th time you play the game, which is like a good problem to have. But inherently, I don't think they should fully bring over that level of... because, yes, the context of the time was, this may be the first three-dimensional video game landscape you've ever had to navigate. And so that is baked into the tutorials. Like, it's good to have some tutorialization, but they have smoother ways of... they have smoother ways of doing that sort of thing in the modern day. I still like Na'vi. I still like the, here's the enemy info and all of that sort of thing. I think that's a fun part of the game. Just like, please get rid of the part where Na'vi is continually like, there's a cold wind blowing from Zora's domain. And I'm like, yes, I know. You've told me this 17 times. I will get there. I'm doing something else. Please do not leave me a text message that I can't escape until I've read it. So,
I've suddenly realized my aversion for notifications on my phone. It's Na'vi's fault.
Well, maybe you should add Na'vi sound effects to all of your text messages and stuff, like whenever you get a push notification.
I used to. I did for a while. Now it's the item collection noise. Oh. But more often than not, I have to leave my phone off because just of the number of times that I've moved, I can get notifications at any time of day or night, and I would like to sleep, as we've already discussed.
Yeah, look, you're brave. I haven't turned my phone off silent in the last 15 years, so.
Oh, I'm silent all the time, right? If my parents want to get hold of me, they message my girlfriend. I'm that bad. I just... Someone's like, is Maisie dead or is she just not got a phone on her? Who knows? 50-50 chance.
Well, who knows? Maybe our beloved owl here will have a revamped version that we are more than willing to put on our phones or have us go around in circles more and more and more. Thank you so much, Will Nelson, for bringing us this piece of Medley's Melodies. And we're going to head over to the Bomber's Notebook, a series in which we take a special look at the various and unique characters found in the Legend of Zelda series. If you have been following the podcast for a while, you might take a double take at this because Wait, didn't we just talk about this character? That's the fun thing about having a franchise in which you keep reincarnating the characters over and over again. Because 3 months ago, we talked about Impa from Skyward Sword. And now we're going to talk about Impa from Hyrule Warriors. I had to. There's always a couple of options with all of the wonderful columns that people are writing. You can only choose, but so many. And oh my gosh, I love this Impa so much.
I love Hyrule Warriors. I got it when it came out, and my sister liked to play with me. The number of hours we played on that game. But Impa, when I picture Impa, I picture Impa from Hyrule Warriors. Because she's quite similar to her version in Skyward Sword, I think. She comes in quite a lot of forms, Impa. But I love that game.
No, you are talking to a room of the converted. I did the Hyrule Warriors official review for Zelda Universe, I believe. And Connor is what you might call mad.
A shameless completionist is what I am.
And has 100%ed Hyrule Warriors Definitive Edition.
Cool.
It took me 15 months.
No.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Basically every Monday for about 4 hours a week for 15 months. That's what I was doing.
And so why is it that it took that long, Connor? Is it the fact that they continually have new full blown maps with 30 different tiles on it? Yes.
So a bunch of different tiles on it. They're all based on different games from the franchise. Every single one is its own challenge. We're not here to talk about the Hyrule Warriors as a game. Just the fact that I have gone through all of that and still love this game is something to be said about my insanity, but also about this game just as it is constituted. Something that I really appreciate about Hyrule Warriors, something that you do not get in any other game in the franchise, is how much story you can suddenly give to so many different characters. Impa has a prominent role to play in Hyrule Warriors as not just Zelda's caretaker, but she's her general. She's her second in command. She's an amazing warrior in and of her own right. And when Zelda goes missing, she's the de facto leader. And so she's dealing with all of this crap.
She's the boss.
She is such a boss.
Yeah, no, I really like the Impa from Hyrule Warriors. I think there's a few, because Hyrule Warriors, the original, the story is not the part that most people would be able to even tell back to you what the story was. They would go, there's dimensions. There's a witch, and she has a crush on Link, probably.
Is that Sia?
Yes.
Is that her name?
Yes,
Sia.
Yes, it's Sia. I love Sia.
But I think the part where it is interesting is you don't see this massive scale in a regular Zelda game. So the idea of a general or something like that is just not, you'll see a general, but it will just be a guy. Like, you don't see a general in command of 10,000 troops, you know? Whereas here, there is that real epic sense of, like, this is a whole kingdom. It's not just about one person. It's about the kingdom. And I think having Impa have that chance to shine there, I think, is really cool.
What I like about this Impa, I think the Bomber's Notebook touches on it, but with Impa, you do see her in quite a few versions as an old woman or, as a young woman. But I think this version has quite a nice balance of the both. It's got that wisdom of her older versions and yet that sort of that strength of her younger version as well. It's quite a nice balance, I feel like, between all of her reincarnations. That's what I quite like about this Impa as well.
Yeah, and I think she also just has a really cool character design. That's the part that's...
Hyrule Warriors just has the best designs, period. All of them are top tier character designs.
I like the giant's blade as well. Her weapons are cool.
Yeah, no, there's some really good designs, but I think this version of Impa, I don't know, the weapons are part of the character design because it's all part of the silhouette or whatever. And I think she has some really cool weapons as well.
I always go with the giant's blade over the Naginata, personally.
Yeah, that's the thing, that in an audio podcast, it's hard to show some of the symbols and stuff, but the Sheikah design is really cool. Just inject like the...
It's like the eye, isn't it?
Yeah, the eye and the symbolism of the... There's more... The Skyward Sword version in particular has... Just like, you can see on the sheath of the sword, for example, if you're looking at the article, you know, there's those designs as well. And I just think, this is just a really fun version of Impa, who has appeared in so many forms across the series. Like, my standout Impa is in the Oracle games, which is very fun. Because
Big Impa,
who at the start of one of them just fully betrays Link and causes the end of the world and turns out to be possessed. And she's like, please, I'm a poor old woman. Can you move this sacred stone so that I can get past? Because I can't touch it for undisclosed reasons, you know? But there's always a different Impa, but it's really fun to have a character who's not really part of the main... Like, if someone asks you who are the main characters of Zelda, Impa wouldn't be in the top five characters probably, but Impa has appeared in so many games in so many different forms that it's really fun to see the different versions of her that there are, and I think this is a really good version.
She's actually one of the original five, or four. It was Link, Zelda, Ganon, Impa. She's in the story of the original Zelda as the one Zelda sends out to try and find a hero who can stop Ganon.
Yeah, it's very... Yeah, like in the old games, a lot of the main characters of the story weren't in the game at all, because it was just like, oh yeah, and Zelda's brother did this and whatever, and it's like, Zelda's brother hasn't appeared, but look, it's in the instruction manual and that's what matters. But yeah, no, very, very, very long-running character in the series, and always look forward to her appearances.
Well, we are very grateful to Caitlin Druitt for opening this page of the Bomber's Notebook. And so we come at last to our feature of the month. Maisie, are you interested in law enforcement or... What is your association with wanting to get Link locked up?
Look, I just think, right, he's great. He saves the world so many times, right? He's a solid dude and he deserves much needed rest. But like at some point, I just thought, like, Jesus, someone's got to just, you know, raise a hand and go, is this like entirely legal? Because he does a lot of dodgy stuff. I think, you know, animal cruelty's up there as well, and you know, Link's awakening, he just obliterates this island. I mean, there's a word for that, but it's quite sinister when you think about it, some of the stuff he does. I just thought someone's got to point it out.
Oh yeah, no, there's so many things that Link does that would be questionable. I mean, some of this applies to all RPG heroes. Like, I've never just gone to a new town and then walked inside people's houses to talk to them.
True.
That has never come into my mind that I should just walk into the house of a stranger uninvited, loot their house for treasure, and then go and talk to them to find out some more information. Like, that is not a normal human thing to do.
Ah, and here I thought it was just my social anxieties.
Yeah, no. Nobody has ever walked into my house and smashed all the vases and then asked me for information on their quest. So
I'm glad.
It may be different where you live, but no, not over here.
Okay, good to know.
I feel like it, when I've been playing Skyrim, and like I think like if you steal someone's horse or like you take something from their house, there will be a consequence for you. So I'm wondering if that would be a funny element to introduce to a future Zelda game. because
just okay. So we already have the open world element to Zelda.
Yeah.
We just need to add the Grand Theft Auto element, where you do something wrong, you grab one on your horse, you run away for a while, and then eventually the wanted status of you goes down.
Yeah. Yep.
You are perfect.
Rip down the wanted signs and remove your notoriety.
I mean, he's already got a motorbike, you know, in the expansion for Breath of the Wild, right? Halfway there, guys.
Yeah, like, of course, the Wind Waker is a famous example of Link actually being held to account for his actions, where he goes inside the rich man's house and smashes all his pots and then has to pay for them.
Yeah.
But that's one of the only times that it's happened. I mean, well, aside from stepping on flowers in Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, there's a certain lady who,
the greatest of crimes,
flower lady, oh,
who
God,
will deal with that particular crime with capital punishment.
Yeah,
so you know, you just got to watch out. But yeah, no, there's so many things that Link does, and it's the breaking and entering is just the start. So what else is there, Maisie?
Well, I thought selling body parts, because like Breath of the Wild, right? Like, I know monsters aren't quite as, you know, what's the word?
Human?
Not as respected as humans, obviously, right? They're not human, but I just think, like, he sells it to, is it Fang and Bone? Am I thinking of something else? Fang and Bone?
Yeah, no, it's Fang and Bone.
Oh, it's Fang and Bone. I just think, like, you know, it's an organ harvesting industry. Is it something more sinister than craftsmanship or entrepreneurship? Don't know, but I think someone's just got to question it because, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, I can understand if you're, I don't know, like, harvesting ears or something to prove that you've defeated them or something would make sense. But harvesting their eyeballs is, like, I don't know, if I ever met anyone who had a big bag full of eyeballs, I would be deeply concerned.
Now, here's the thing. You are attaching a certain amount of sentience to these creatures that I don't think is there. They are also the living embodiments of pure evil. And what hunter does not go kill their quarry and harvest the meat and the other materials to then either use for themselves or sell to a butcher or similar?
You raise very good points. You know, it's a philosophical debate with these monsters, though. Like, can anything be truly evil? Apart from Ganon, obviously, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you could argue that it is actually environmentally responsible to eat them. Because they're a renewable resource, because every time the blood moon comes around, they come back to life.
That's a good point. It's a sustainable circle of life. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's just like Simba. He understands the circle of life. So that makes it okay to have a bag full of eyeballs. So I'm glad we've, the court of Hyrule has absolved Link of that particular crime.
Dang it. I wish I had a gavel or something just to be like, all right, court is in session. The case Hyrule v. Link is underway.
Yep. No, he's it's actually good. It's actually the problem is that he isn't harvesting enough of their body parts to feed all of Hyrule with this renewable resource.
Should capitalize on that, absolutely. Mm. I do think he spends too much around graves, though, moving the stones and everything. It's like grave robbing's not cool. Slightly disturbing.
You have a good point.
I mean, it's cool stuff under these stones, but I'm just like, mate.
It depends on the grave, because is it grave robbing if there's a dungeon underneath, or if it's an old man being like, hey, have a sword?
Yeah, well, is the true criminal Link, or is the true criminal the grave keeper who has a little paid side gig running to dig up the graves in his own graveyard.
I'll grave rob for you for a fee.
Link knows what he's doing though, right? He paid him. He's
10.
He knows. He's old enough to know the difference between right and wrong. Right, he knows what he's doing.
I don't know. He's being raised by a bunch of fae creatures.
And a tree.
And a tree. Your moral system's going to be horribly skewed.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the main issue with grave robbing in the Zelda series is that the graves are always full of ghosts who are still there. And so, I don't know, I feel like it becomes, you know, if we're going back to the court, do the ghosts have rights? Like, is that breaking and entering of their homes?
I mean, how would you feel if you were a ghost? You just vibe in, and then this little boy with a green tunic comes in with a really annoying fairy. I'd be like, can you just leave, please?
To be fair, you rarely, if ever, become a ghost just to vibe.
I don't know.
You're kind of angry by default, usually.
Oh, then you're just going to be extra angry when he comes in.
Exactly. So it's not like he's done worse. It's the same. It's like, oh, I'm angry? Now I have something to actually be angry at. Forget this, you know, centuries-old grudge that I've been bearing for some reason against people who are currently dead. Now I have something to actually be upset at. If anything, Link is doing them a favor.
Like, because we were arguing about the Breath of the Wild enemies and whether they count, you know, as people. But I think the skeletons are people because in Majora's Mask, you can just chat to them. And so, you know, like if they're people who you can talk to, surely there's a level of sentience there that they're not just evil monsters.
Yeah, they're definitely above the monsters, I'd say on that.
Though you do have to be looking like them in order to talk to them. So that's a bit of prejudice on their part, if you ask me.
Hmm. Well, that's all right. We will. I don't. What's the final verdict, Judge Connor, on Link's grave robbing?
I would probably say, as a whole, he's pretty guilty of this one.
Yeah.
Justice.
Well, let's see what on his long list of crimes.
I mean, there's animal cruelty as well, right?
The thing about animal cruelty, I don't think we have the right to judge that one because I think the animals have that taken care of.
I think the cuckoos do take their revenge. I'll tell you what, though, the number of times I've like accidentally swung my sword and hit a cuckoo, I'm like, no, I didn't mean it.
Yes,
sorry.
Absolutely.
Sorry.
No, sorry. We have been effectively traumatized.
Yeah.
The cuckoos have their own efficient justice system. They don't need the courts of Hyrule. They will mete out justice.
Yeah. I don't think the remlets can do the same though, you know, Scarlet Sword. Have you ever just chucked them over the side?
They fly back! They're so cute!
I think the last time I was on the podcast, I joked that maybe they'd evolved their ears as a result of being chucked over the side.
That sounds vaguely familiar. At the very least, they had to have had some kind of evolutionary advantage because I'm surprised that the people living in Skyloft don't have wings of the, by themselves or whatever. Because
oh, yeah, like massive Dumbo ears.
Because seriously, you would think loft wings are not. The fact that any 3-year-old could accidentally tumble over the side because there's no fencing, nothing anywhere on these islands.
Yeah, look, that's what we call natural selection, Connor, is people who were good at not jumping off the side of a cliff grew on to become members of Skyloft.
Well, that is a very small village for a reason, I guess.
There aren't that many kids in Skyloft, though.
No.
It's actually 90% of the population just falls off, and those are the remaining few.
There's like two, if I remember. No, two and a baby.
A baby, yeah.
So there you go. That's the the reason for the small population in Skyloft.
Yeah, I think we can leave this. We'll say that this one's out of our jurisdiction.
Yes.
The Cuckoos have their own legal system. So, all right, any other crimes that that Link is accused of?
Identity fraud.
On the one hand, for those who don't know, we're talking specifically about Majora's Mask, because if you go to the Stockpot Inn at 1 in the afternoon on the first day, you'll go to Anju and she's like, "Excuse me, do you have an appointment?" Yes. "What's your name?" "Link." "Oh, I have you down for a 1 p.m. arrival." "Awesome." It's like, "Wait, what?" But then a Goron comes in about an hour later, and apparently his name is also Link. But because it's a Goron and he has an accent, the way all Gorons do with the Goro at the end, Anju thinks he's saying Link Goro. It's like, "Nope, I don't have a Link Goro here." "Oh, guess I have to sleep outside."
Tragic. Yeah, look, this is one that, as Link's lawyer, I'd just like to say...
You have taken on the role then?
Yeah, I've taken on the role of the defense.
All right.
I just want to say, you can't prove that that happened because time keeps resetting.
In which timeline did this so-called identity theft occur?
Yes, can you...
I've lost track.
Can you point out this timeline to me? Can you find it? Yeah, look.
I'll have to consult my notes.
In Link's official version of events, you know, the final run, Link did nothing except help all the townspeople, help a couple reunite for their wedding, and then headed off to fight the moon. So I don't know what you're talking about, and you cannot prove any of these allegations.
Taking the actual incident into an occurrence, whether or not we're going to go with the lawyer sophistry, which is a very convincing sophistry, by the way. The fact that Anju is mixing up the people who are in and or is not in the book, that's on Anju. The fact that Link doesn't do anything after finding out that there's this Goron who's supposed to have the room, in a court of law, he's probably going to be found not guilty. This is, however, very much on him. That is a moral failing on Link's part.
Mm. Yeah, no, I'll grant a moral failing. I think it is sad to watch the Goron outside in the rain.
He's a rock. He's fine.
Yeah, no, I think it must be tough in a pre-internet society to know what to do about identity fraud, because I'm sure the same way that we get scam calls these days of people being like, "This is your insurance calling, your Windows has a virus," you know, back in the 1800s, there would have been people just wandering through town being like, "I'm a doctor." And it's like, okay. You can ask the doctor society in a town 3 months ride away by horse and you have no other way of contacting them. So you just have to trust that I'm a doctor. You know,
I mean, this is how you get all those snake oil salesmen coming through town. Of course, we have those today. They're just supplement pills.
Oh, yeah. No, they've adapted for the times. But I feel like identity fraud is one that's gotten more difficult. Like, there are plenty of scams that have become easier. But identity fraud is one that's becoming a lot tougher in the age of being able to Google it. Like, if Andrew had been able to have an online booking system or something and could cross-check date of birth or something, you know?
Yeah. Get the credit card as proof of purchase. Also, how did he make the reservation?
I don't know. Maybe another Goron came through the previous week and said, "By the way, my friend Link Goro is gonna be here at the inn next week."
Maybe.
A letter? I don't know.
Maybe. Cause
yeah, there is a postman.
He's very good at his job.
He is very good at his job. It's a functioning town with a non-functioning mayor, and they're doing great.
So we've ruled not guilty. Doesn't mean he didn't do anything wrong.
Well, I think that is that it for Link's list of crimes? Surely he can't have done anything else.
Oh, he's done several things.
Yes.
So, just to go down the list, skipping over the things we've done already, unlicensed weapons. I am unaware of any weapon registration system in Hyrule. If you are aware of this, feel free to elucidate that.
I feel like the Royal Guard, right? They all know there's set weapons for all of them. And then you got Link. He rocks up with some sword infused with an electric wand. You know, they're probably thinking, what is going on? We're not aware of this. So I'm reckon everyone's kind of got their set idea of what a weapon looks like, and then Link just turns up with his whole arsenal. So I think maybe they're like, we need to check that power he's got there, because it's a little bit dangerous.
Counterpoint: all of the guards and soldiers in Hyrule at this point are dead. Link is not.
I mean, they're quite useless, aren't they?
Someone's doing something right.
I mean, he did sleep for 100 years, so he was just happy, you know.
Good point.
I think, look, fundamentally, there's a legal precedent called Finders Keepers, and Link found this on the ground.
Possession is 9/10 of the law.
Yeah. Possession is 9/10 of the law, and Link is in possession of 90% of all weapons.
Yeah, he is.
So really, Link is the law when it comes down to it.
Yeah.
Put that on a quote wall. Oh my gosh. That's so good. I mean, especially considering that the people that he is taking these weapons from are, again, embodiments of pure evil. If anything, he's disarming a violent population. It's very important here.
But then he's kind of, it's like, I mean, you know, he could use these weapons probably for good, but then he could use them to bash a cuckoo, who knows? But
and then he pays for it, because the cuckoos have their own justice system.
They do. But yeah. The issue is people have got to know what he's got, just so that, you know, everyone kind of knows where he's getting all this stuff from.
Okay.
Maybe have it checked for tetanus. some of these old rusty weapons he's picked up.
Well, by the sounds of it, this is a matter we need to take up with the princess. But unless and until a weapon registry is established, Link is not guilty. He cannot be guilty of a law that does not exist.
No, well, that's the thing. In Breath of the Wild, there's no functioning kingdom. In Tears of the Kingdom, you would presume that Princess Zelda would have become Queen Zelda and taken over, but she seemed to have no interest in it and just ran off. So if there is a functioning legal system, I haven't seen it.
Exactly.
Complete anarchy.
Yeah.
There is nothing beyond the city level government, and at this point the mayor is currently dealing over the state of pumpkins and cheese. So
yeah, well, there's a mayoral election on, and it's very important.
We'll see how that goes.
But no, I think anything happening in the wilderness of Hyrule is currently not happening within a legal state that's been recognized. So there is no jurisdiction. It's like committing a murder out on the high seas, and it's like, I don't know, it wasn't in a country. You know?
Good point. Well, the next one here on the list, there is no defense. And Link similarly has no defense, because he generally dies, and that is when he steals things. Oh, gosh. The whole situation with Link's Awakening and stealing stuff from that store. On the one hand, that's 980 rupees for that bow. That is highway robbery. On the other hand, I'm pretty sure half the times I have stolen things, especially as a kid, were completely by accident. I just had it and accidentally just left with it, and it was, wait, I have this now? Wait, why are you all calling me thief? What happened? And then without knowing what happened, I go back into the shop and just desserts are had.
Yeah, look, the client will admit guilt on this one, but in view of his good reputation amongst the community, I just think, you know, maybe some community service rather than a fine or a sentence.
The death penalty?
Yeah, you know, maybe not the death penalty. I think maybe we can take it down a notch, and maybe Link can do some community service out cutting grass, which is a community service he loves to do. He just loves to serve his community.
Mm. Yeah, free money from that grass.
It's, you pay back the money that you owe. There you go.
But also the shopkeeper should probably be looked at.
Tried for murder.
Tried for a whole bunch of things. I think some anti-monopoly legislation needs to be enacted.
Yes. Agreed.
It may be not fair that there's one place in the country in which you can receive the bow, and it's a merchant who has put the prices sky high.
No kidding. Also, where did he get this Eldritch power? That might be something you want to look into as well.
Yeah, look, yeah. The Sith Lightning is a separate story.
Yeah. It's not at liberty to disclose how he came about this power.
Yeah, this is there's another ongoing legal case that cannot be discussed at this time.
Yeah, you mean like the actual existence of the island in which the shop is on?
Yeah, look, there's a lot of legal mysteries around Koholint Island.
Yeah, Link gets rid of all of it.
Which is exactly why Link cannot be responsible for island obliteration, because we don't know whether or not that island is real in the first place.
Again, it's very philosophical, you know?
Yes, it's very philosophical. How can we know that the island ever existed if Link blew it up, you know?
But it existed in here.
If an island collapses in the middle of the ocean and no one is around to see it, does it still constitute a crime?
But it did happen in here, in his heart.
It did.
His heart. Well, yeah.
That is strangely Marin-shaped.
Link can serve a jail sentence in his heart.
He will live with this guilt for the rest of his life. We'll assume he made it. We don't know. He's probably still on that driftwood somewhere.
Mm. He could have had a happy life on that island.
Yeah. No, very sad.
Ignorance may be bliss, but it can still kill you.
Yes, for those of you who are not viewing the visual feed, which you are not, Connor just did a 6-7, showing that he's one of the youth.
Oh, is that what that is? I thought that's balancing scales.
That's what I thought it was too.
Yeah, six of one, half dozen of the other, you know, back and forth, weighing one hand on the other. Is that 6-7 now?
I don't know why you have to weigh the 6-7 on a scale, but you do. That's I'm not useful enough to understand. But I'm sure our podcast listeners will be excited.
I have learned a thing about the youths. Maybe I will be hip again. I was never hip. Anywho, chemical warfare, huh? Would you pair it with the prosecution? Like to elaborate on this one?
Bombs. He's blowing up stuff.
That's not chemical warfare.
Well, he's got right. He is just an absolute. I'll tell you what, right? Shooting those obviously little like explosive. They're like those, oh God, what'd you call them? It's too late for me. I'm starting to forget the words for things. You know, you've got the Bokka bins and they've got the little campsite and you've got those explosive barrels, right?
Ah.
Shoots a flaming arrow and it's... And also, you know, the like the bombs he's got, like the little detonators thing. I mean, I don't know if I could call them chemical, but equally they're made of some kind of strange force that can't altogether be quite explained. It's a strange energy. Think, you know.
Okay.
spreading poisonous fumes. He's got a variety of tactics, and I think, you know, he's a very successful warrior. And but one person with all this power just can't go by unchecked. It's very similar to sort of unlicensed weapons. He's just got an absolute arsenal of weapons and devices that no one else seems to have.
I mean, look, when you're a one-man army, you have to have all of the arsenal of that army.
Yeah, I mean,
it's true.
I think if we were to take this to Ocarina of Time, because Breath of the Wild we've discussed, but yes, the Deku Knights and such are, I feel like they probably should be regulated. I feel like having a flashbang device that you just throw in the middle of any fight is a bit of a danger, is a bit of a health hazard.
Yeah, it's a mild hazard, you know, could cause blindness, could cause a really cool, you know, disappearance, but it's quite dangerous.
Yeah.
Does that mean we need to start regulating the Sheikah as well?
Nah, they're cool.
They're like the secret assassin force. I'm pretty sure they're licensed.
I feel like they use it and they don't get noticed. Link just does it anywhere, you know? Link's not very subtle.
Yeah. Link's just gone out in the open. Like, I feel like if Link...
He's a child. He doesn't understand subtlety.
If he's going to be throwing around flashbangs everywhere, he should have to carry around like an epilepsy warning of, like, the, you know, just advance notice.
I'm a registered flash offender.
So true. Speaking of being a registered flash offender...
Speaking of flash offenders, our final on the list, there is no excuse. Public indecency. Link's just going around naked. Right in front of people, no less. I mean, if you're going swimming, that's one thing. Alone. But you're going into towns. You know Paya's, you know, freaking out.
Yeah. I mean, some NPCs like to comment quite favorably on him. But I mean...
To be fair, he does cut a fine figure.
He does, but I mean, even though he's slept 100 years, he should still know social standards. Just put some clothes on, for Pia's sake. You know, poor girl.
Nobody else.
Yeah.
I love the image you have here on the article. The fact that you showed up out of nowhere, and stark naked no less, means you're likely a total creep.
I can't argue with that, you know?
Yeah, look.
Prosecution rests.
Well, the defense would like to state that fashion is pain. And. And Link is going to great pains to be very fashionable indeed. But is that a crime, really, when it comes down to it?
I don't know. What's a greater crime against fashion? Being stark naked or that mushroom hat?
I don't know. I quite liked that mushroom hat. I thought it really suited him. I liked the Gerudo bikini, the Gerudo attire as well. I thought it really suited him.
I wish I could pull that off as well as Link does.
We all do.
Mm. Yeah, look, I think Link, he's just someone who sets his own standards. He'll wear anything, whether it matches or not. I think if we go out of the realms of the courts and into the realms of the fashion police, I think they would have a few things to say about Link and some of the exciting combinations of outfits that he's been seen in public.
That's going to be a new article someday, the fashion crimes of Link.
Oh, yeah.
That's given me a very good idea.
There you go.
There we go, Cody. Dedicate it to you.
Have at it, Maisie.
Yeah. No, I'd love to see it. You go through Tears of the Kingdom, Breath of the Wild, and just find the worst combinations of outfits that you can and present them as a fashion show and see how unhinged Link's clothing choices can get.
I like that.
Yeah, just naked but with a mushroom hat.
Oh, gosh. Woo!
It'd be so beautiful. A little mushroom hat.
A little mushroom hat and nothing. Nope. I'm not going there. Nope. We're gonna leave here before actual crimes start getting committed. So, I guess Link is in fact guilty of some crimes, though perhaps not as many crimes as one may initially assume. So, I guess we need to sentence him. Link needs a sentence. So, for his crimes, what should Link have to do?
Look, I think the only ones that have stuck, trespassing, breaking and entering, and theft.
As far as offenses, I mean, we would need to generally count out how much stuff he has stolen.
The identity fraud, potentially.
He was not guilty of identity fraud.
No, not guilty. That's right. Yep. That's the fault of the inn for not keeping better records.
Right.
Did the island count?
The island did not count because we cannot prove that the island existed.
So I think Link is just a youth, and all he is accused of is a little bit of theft
and public indecency.
Trespassing and breaking and entering, and some crimes against fashion. So, look, I just think that he can be rehabilitated, and okay, he just needs some community service work,
such as saving the world.
So,
let's have him save the world a few times. That should work.
And actually, if we have a look at his history, I think you'll find he's already served his community service. For the last 100 years, he has been out cutting grass. You may say, wasn't he asleep? Can you prove that? Is my question.
I think we can. Pretty sure we can.
Look, I think in light of the fact that he has, in fact, saved the world, I think we can write that off as community service already done. And we can set him free out into the community again.
I think he's trapped in a bit of a vicious circle. He's got to save the world, but during that time, he kind of does all that stuff again. So it's like he's sort of got to keep on going on and on. Almost like he's just reincarnated and he's got to do all the same stuff.
Oh my God, that is the actual cycle. It has nothing to do with demise at all. It's just Link committing atrocities and needing to make up for it.
Atoning for his sins.
Yep, and so as soon as he can get through a game in which he doesn't commit any crimes while saving the world, he can finally rest from his cycle of reincarnation.
Alright. Link, you're cursed to do this forever. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, that's a bit beyond the court system. He's been stuck in like a Greek hell situation where he's forced to, like Sisyphus, forced to repeat the same actions over and over again.
Pretty much. To our sick amusement, the true villain was the courts the entire time. And on that note, we bid you adieu to Hyrule Court. Thank you all so much for joining us at the Zelda Universe podcast. Our special thanks to our column writers for this month, Will Nelson and Caitlin Druitt. Macy, thank you so much for, first off, writing this very entertaining list for us to discuss.
Welcome.
And for being willing to stay up as late as you are to record this podcast with us.
Of course. I had such a nice time being on here. Yeah. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah. Looking forward to having you for our Crimes of Fashion edition.
Oh, yeah. That, I tell you what, I will be doing that at some point this year.
Awesome. Cody, great to have you on.
Yeah. I'm always happy to come here. I'm happy to represent anyone in future legal battles of Hyrule. I'll just show up. I won't even be the guest, but someone will accuse link of something and I'll just show up and say, actually, I think you'll find that you cannot prove that allegation.
Ace Attorney, Hyrule Edition, starting Cody Davis.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for joining with us at the Zelda Universe podcast. We try and do this once a month as we reminisce about the many adventures that we've had in the land of Hyrule and beyond. I hope that you will come by next month where, assuming everything goes well, we are going to have an amazing conversation about a special project that Zelda Universe has been working on for the past several months, and looking forward to discussing that with all of you. So, hope you'll jump in next month. Have a wonderful rest of your day, and we'll see you next time on the Zelda Universe podcast.